This is Studio 360. I'm Kurt Anderson. 5 years ago, as the invasion of Iraq was becoming an inevitability, Susan Sontag joined me in Studio 360. I wanted to talk with her about depictions of war and her own experiences of wartime as well. Sontag, who died in 2004, was an essayist, a novelist, a filmmaker, a director, altogether a central figure in our intellectual life for the last several decades. Years ago, she had very influentially argued that looking at photographs from war zones and atrocities might desensitize us, make us more complacent about horrible things being done to other people. But Susan Sontag revisited that idea in her book Regarding the Pain of Others and found that she'd sort of changed her mind.
Well, my experience in Sarajevo between 1993 and the end of 1995, where I lived most of the time in that period while the city was under siege in Sarajevo, was really a very special experience in that I wasn't there all the time for that 3 years. I was coming back and forth. I actually was there 14 times, never less than 2 weeks, never more than 2 months, because I did like to get out and take a bath. There was no water or electricity or any kind of communication with the outside world except the UN planes. And I had that unique experience of being in a very tight, confined war zone, experiencing what everybody was experiencing. We were all on the same level, whether we were foreign people or residents, because the city was surrounded and under siege. And then being able to go out and see how it was reported. And I discovered that oddly enough, the experience for most people of seeing the war, say, on television, because that would be the main access to the war through the media, even more than the print images, it didn't fully convince people of the reality of the war. I mean, it was almost as if what they saw on television every night about the siege and all the people being killed in Sarajevo was some kind of photo op. I actually had people ask me when I would come back to New York, well, I remember one very intelligent person saying to me, do you personally feel you're in danger when you're in Sarajevo? And I couldn't believe I was being asked such a question. Yeah, exactly. And I said, I found myself saying, I said, do you watch television? And he said, yes. I said, do you see what's going on there every night in the news? He said, yes. I said, well, that's what it's like. And he said, oh, my God. It's actually somewhere, it was as if for him, well, that was something.
Film, effectively.
Well, not so much a film, but the way something horrible, an accident might happen on one street corner here in New York City, and everyone would rush and it would be on the evening news. But in the meantime, the rest of the city life was proceeding as normal. I think it is hard to take in the reality through images. And I think every journalist and aid worker and foreigner who was in Sarajevo felt when they would leave, because of the peculiar protracted nature of the siege and how totally weird that was, that basically if you weren't there, you didn't understand. Maybe that's a feeling that everybody has who's in a war, that if you hadn't been there, if you hadn't been in a war, in any war, you couldn't really understand what it was like.
Was this book a warning while you were there, or did you suddenly feel, no, my view of what images can do has changed?
It was the second. I didn't for a minute think about writing when I was there. I wasn't there to write. I wasn't there to write a book at all. I was there to pitch in and work in various projects in the city, and it was a rather quixotic thing to do, but I wasn't there as a writer. No, it came because I began to think about what these images mean, and I began to think about a lot of the reigning cliches about images of war. I'll tell you one, which, of course, we're all familiar with, which is that we're very blasé now. We see so many images of atrocity, so many images of horror, that we actually don't react to them anymore.
A thought you had yourself had once published grandly.
Exactly. I'm afraid I'm at the origin of that very widespread view. At least I thought it was a fairly original observation when I made it as central to that book of essays that I wrote and that I published about 25 years ago called On Photography. Well, I don't think it's true. And I guess I like to argue with myself and, well, not because I just like to argue with myself, because I like to think that I have a better view, that my experience teaches me something. if we don't learn from our experience, then well, what else can we learn from? And I think my view, which I think has been influential, is too simple. I don't think we just become inured or desensitized. I think it's a much more complicated process. And I think if people do feel turned off or indifferent to images of horror and war and suffering that they see and that they feel indignant about, I think it comes not because they're blasé, but because they feel impotent or powerless. And I think that's a perfectly understandable reaction.
So in a sense, your change of heart about the power of images to portray war and atrocity, it represents kind of a disillusioning or a reillusioning. Or...
Well, that's a very clever way of putting it. A disillusioning, yes. The disillusionment. That's right. That's absolutely right.
Susan Sontag talking with me in 2003 on the eve of the Iraq War. I asked Sontag about the depictions of war in writing and art through the centuries. One of the things we talked about was Homer's Iliad.
Well, you know, it's so interesting how in this great epic poem of almost 3,000 years ago, Homer is portraying the horror and the pity of war because it's full of pity for the sufferings of those who are wounded and killed on both sides in that conflict. And it's very impartial, I think. Homer treats war as something that's just part of human activity. It's something awful, but it exists. It's something people do. It's something people want to do, as painful and awful as it is. And obviously they get some satisfaction out of it too. It's a very masculine activity and connected with notions of glory and assertion. And I think that throughout most of history, all of history actually, that's been the attitude to war. It isn't saying that people like war, but it is saying that they think war is inevitable. Goya is a kind of turning point. I think what's interesting about Goya, what's magnificent and admirable about Goya, is that these are images of protest. They're not just showing us what is horrible. They are saying this shouldn't happen. I don't think Homer is saying this shouldn't happen. I don't think Shakespeare is saying this shouldn't happen in Henry V, for instance, which is
quite the
also,
opposite almost.
Right, quite the opposite. I mean, although Shakespeare too can see the pity of war and the pity of suffering. I mean, no one had a greater range of emotions than Shakespeare. But he's certainly not – there's no protest in Shakespeare. I don't think there's any protest really to speak of in the representation of these conflicts until the beginning of the 19th century and until Goya. I think Goya is a kind of turning point. Goya is actually saying we should be horrified. We should not just find this horrible. We should be horrified. We should protest. We should deplore. We should take a moral position.
And which of his paintings do you find the most moving in its – or
Well, what he shows in this series of images is tremendous sadistic cruelties of soldiers against civilians. One of the most shocking statistics I know of is that in the First World War, 90% of the casualties were – I may be off by a few points, but more or less 90% of the casualties were military. Were soldiers. And in the Second World War, something like 90% of the casualties were civilians. And that's the direction we're going. And that, of course, is why the Peninsular Wars are kind of forerunner of modern war, where you have soldiers making war against civilians. They couldn't bomb them yet, but they were on their way. And Goya is reacting to a new kind of war, a new kind of war on European soil at any rate. And what he shows are the most awful things. I mean, people being dismembered, hanging, people who are hanged, who have had their limbs amputated. What's so striking in these Goya images are the captions, which apparently are by Goya himself, where he says things like, "Can you believe it? Can you look at this? This is impossible to look at."
Which is a sort of modernist kind of
very, yes,
caption.
Not identifying and saying, you know, this happened in such and such a place. Or sometimes he'll say, "I saw it." Or I saw this too. Or this is the truth, one of them says, his captions. They're utterly modern, unique captions. They're a cry of horror and indignation. There's nothing like it in the history of art.
Susan Sontag from A Conversation in 2003. We spoke just before the American invasion of Iraq and a year before she died. In a minute, we'll look at how the Vietnam War was fought and refought in the movies.
Fighting soldiers from the sky.
I know one Vietnam vet who told me that when they showed the Green Berets at the end, when John Wayne is walking off into the misplaced sunset with the Vietnamese boy, troops threw beer cans at the screen.
The brave men of the Green Berets.
That's ahead in Studio 360 from PRI, Public Radio International. Stay with us.
These are men, America's best. 100 men will test today, but only three win the Green Beret.
This is Studio 360. I'm Kurt Anderson. This month, it'll be 5 years since the beginning of the Iraq War. To mark that anniversary, we're revisiting a conversation I had in early 2003, just before the war started, with the late writer Susan Sontag. She and I talked about her experiences in war zones and about the artistic depictions and cultural impact of war in general. At one point, I asked her about Jeff Wall, a Canadian art photographer whom she'd written about.
Well, Jeff Wall is one of a group of photographers who essentially photograph tableaus. They photograph situations which are set up and if you want to say staged. They also do a lot through digital manipulation. So they're the actual photograph, in fact, may be a composite of a number of photographs that are melded together digitally. And I was was thinking about. Well, we have all these horrible photographs and all these upsetting photographs, and part of our life is looking at these images of terrible things that are happening to other people, not us, by definition, a situation of safety. If you're watching it as an image, you're not there. And I was trying to think if there could be images that could preserve their quality of protest, that wouldn't sort of dry up or evaporate, and what images would continue to appall us or stir us or move us or make us reflect. I think it's clearly true, for me at any rate, that images which are part of a narration can continue to have that effect. I can think of certain war films that I've seen over and over again, and I never get used to them. I never stop being moved by them and stirred by them and provoked to reflection.
Jeff Wall's work that I've seen reproduced is this, as you say, this whatever the opposite of a tableau vivant is, a tableau mort, I guess.
Yeah, well, it is a kind of tableau vivant, but that's just the point. You see, I was trying to think, well, I know that we can do this with movies, but the question was, could a still image have that? And I thought, well, an image that continues to haunt me is Jeff Wall's reconstruction in his studio in Vancouver. He's a Canadian, of an imagined event in the war in Afghanistan that was waged futilely and with enormous loss of life on both sides by Russia in the late 1980s. And his picture is called Dead Troops Talk. And it shows 13 dead Russian soldiers. Most of them are sitting upright and talking on a slope.
But also horribly wounded and
horribly
obviously dead.
Horribly wounded, many of them missing limbs or tops of their skulls or whatever. And they're smiling and talking to each other. It's an extraordinary at first when I saw it, I assumed because it actually has a place and a date in the full title of the picture. I think the picture was made in, if I recall correctly, 1992. But it's dated as something that happened, I believe, in 1986. It turns out it doesn't refer to a particular ambush by Afghan soldiers, Taliban, I guess they would have to be called.
Pre-Taliban, I think.
Well, proto-Taliban, let's put it, very much supported by the United States at that time. There isn't a very specific ambush, but certainly things like that happened all the time. And the candor of the image, the starkness of it, the kind of contradiction between the expressions that they have and the way and what's actually happened to them. Maybe that's part of the secret of an image which continues to move us. Jeff Wall, with his image of war, was giving us something horrible, but not allowing us to immediately go to the obvious or cliche response to it. And so the image guards its power. It keeps its power. And that is really the question. How do images keep their power? Goya, still for me, every time I see the disasters of war in a museum, I mean, you can see it in many museums in the world. Many museums have copies of this print series. I never stop being horrified by it. Sometimes I have to walk out of the room.
The late Susan Sontag. We spoke in 2003, just before the U.S. invasion of Iraq. You can see that photograph by Jeff Wall that we were talking about at our website, studio360.org.